Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud, and a special one because it's the last one before next week's general election. And the Financial Mail panel this morning has got sort of two election type editorials in your package. One speculates on the relative strengths of Cyril Ramaphosa and Ace Magashule in the party. You seem to lean towards Ace Magashule having the upper hand, and it's kind of hard to, but you're going to explain why you think that just now. And we talk a little bit about Tito Mboweni and hope that he's going to be there later on. But in the meantime, there is shock news just landed, and if I can get it up on my phone, the IRR, the Institute of Race Relations, which as we know has been doing some very accurate polling, has put out today its most recent poll, and is going to update it again next Monday for the last time. But it has a scenario where the ANC vote nationally falls below 50%, where the DA at its maximum rises to 24%, and where the EFF more than doubles its vote last time to 14%. It's an absolutely breathtaking development. And these polls are credible. They allocate undecided voters. They're very carefully done. Nobody does it better than these guys. Sikonathi, are we all, what's going to happen? So Anchor Capital, sorry, I don't want to talk too much. Anchor Capital, this is Peter Armitage, I think, Rob Rose, says that with less than the 50% of the vote, this will be a shock result. And in this scenario, the EFF will likely emerge as kingmaker. Moody's downgrades SA sovereign debt credit rating to junk. Ramaphosa becomes a lame duck president, and his job to turn around will be arduous, if not impossible. The ANC below 50%, what happens?
I think that's a rather drastic scenario. I don't see that happening in this election. At least give it 5 years, and then we definitely can get the ANC below 50%. But Cyril Ramaphosa is already a duck, lame president. He's just sitting there governing through commissions because he can't stand up and take decisions. You might argue then that would be worse after the election. But I don't see the ANC dropping below a majority in this election.
But Ron Darby, the EFF more than doubling its vote. I mean, it's clearly doing a lot better than people thought. If that's where it stands now. What's happened that we've missed?
I think we're missing a lot. EFF, that would be a big surprise. But you know, in the last local government elections, we underestimated what opposition parties would do. So, I mean, the EFF climbed to 14%. The one party I think is going to struggle, I think, is DA, right? The DA is Musi Maimane and that whole fiction between Tony Leon and that Helen Zille part. On the EFF front, but what have they... I mean, they haven't been very vocal since last year. Last year, they had the whole land claims thing. It was their big battering ram. And
They've been quiet. They've been relatively quiet.
And sort of took
quiet.
That away from them. So that'll be quite... it depends on how...
So the most likely, if you take the average turnouts, guys, of the last couple of elections, let's say 71.9%. In the IRR poll, the ANC gets 51%, the DA gets 24%, and the EFF gets 14%. And there's obviously also RANs, but the ANC could manage without. Could manage to in Parliament as a divided party, it would still have a majority. What's more alarming for the ANC, I would have suggested, is the Gauteng numbers, where even at turnout of 70.4%, the best the ANC does is 39% in Gauteng. The DA does 39% as well. And the EFF does 12%. So it puts the ANC, or puts the DA, into a particularly perilous position. Does it stand back because it has now said that it won't, it's reversed its previous thing, it will not do coalitions with the EFF.
It's the other way. It's the EFF that said it won't do a
coalition
with
the DA. The DA has also said the same thing.
Okay.
So that leaves the EFF, and it only leaves the EFF and the ANC fighting for places at the table. And the economic consequences of that in terms of ratings, I think, TJ, would be pretty severe.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So, I mean, is there no idea in Gauteng they might do a sort of a grand coalition? You don't ever see the DA working with the ANC in Gauteng, with maybe the DA going in as a senior partner. I mean, let's say there's a few decimals this way or that way. So, I mean, that to me is also a scenario that needs to be on the table.
Yeah. That the DA is the senior partner.
Well,
yeah.
It depends on who gets the most votes there.
Yeah.
Also maybe what the deal is between the two of them.
Yeah.
But I mean, I also don't see the EFF and the DA working together. I mean, there are many potholes in Joburg that also talk against that, I'd say. And I mean, in terms of ratings, I mean, what could a sort of ratings outcome is there for South Africa if there's no strong single voice in government that can call the shots?
Well, I would
and that's the problem.
That the entry, Rob, of the EFF at any level of either provincial or national government would be ratings negative. Heavily ratings negative.
Mm. It certainly is ratings negative. I think the EFF's policies are economic lunacy. I mean, any one of the policies is insane. But in Gauteng, it does put the EFF as the obvious kingmaker. And it would suggest that the most natural route is for them to do a coalition with the ANC, especially since we've seen people like the Deputy President David Mabuza and others speaking recently of how they want Malema back in the party. There's an affinity within the ANC to do that kind of a deal. The EFF, whether they would do it, is something else entirely.
One wonders what the price would be. There's a surprise in these numbers as well for the DA, because at a voter turnout of 71.9% in the Western Cape, they scrape home with 50%. Anything more than that, and they lose their majority in the Western Cape. The ANC rises, I think it does best, at a voter turnout of 77.3%. They would get 30% of the vote, and the EFF would get... the ACDP is also in there. The EFF gets 5% of the vote on almost any count, 71.9, 69.2, also becomes able to make or break governments one way or the other.
I'm not entirely sure about this poll.
I've never seen South African politics this
divided.
This fluid.
Absolutely. And also, you know, there is an alternative poll. There's the Ipsos poll, which came out yesterday. And at 71%, they had the ANC getting 61% of the votes and the DA getting 19%.
Yeah.
And that's obviously vastly different from this IRR poll. I do wonder, though, whether the DA, because the DA got 22.2%, I think, in the last election, 2014. I just don't know if they're going to actually increase from that 22. And that scenario, the IRR scenario, suggests that they will increase nationally.
By 1 or 2 points.
I think the IRR is being too optimistic and too generous to the DA, particularly in the Western Cape. The DA has been shooting itself left, right and centre. I do not see it increasing its poll over the 2014 numbers. Certainly, Musi Maimane has failed, in my humble opinion, to do what Helen Zille had in mind when she said, we want a black leader. Musi certainly does not sound like a black leader and certainly does not represent the black view in the Democratic Alliance.
To be unfair, when we look at the DA, Musi was supposed to be the black leader, to bring in the black voice. But I think DA has moved away from that, especially post Ramaphosa. I mean, when Ramaphosa came in, DA has shifted away from the whole idea of becoming a big one day around the country. I think almost in their thinking, DA was like, no, we're happy with being an opposition party. I'm very happy with, hence we see Tony Leon and Helen Zille back in the swing of things, was almost going back to their core base. So that whole idea of becoming a black, transformed DA
you
party.
That's into the lager.
Yeah, yeah. When I look at DA, they retreating into the lager. They're very happy.
It's not too late. I mean, TJ, you may know more about this than me, but I mean, there's been a drift away of conservative voters from the DA, conservative white voters from the DA to the Freedom Front Plus. And they were the people who Tony Leon drew into the DA with his Fight Back campaign back in When was it?
1999. 2004,
yeah. Thabo Mbeki against Thabo. In fact, the group in front has adopted exactly
the same thing. Yeah, fight back.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether they have to pay royalties for that slogan.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. So there's definitely a battle. If you read some of the Afrikaans Sunday papers, yeah. Well, the Afrikaans Sunday paper, you'll see there's a serious fight there, a turf war between the Freedom Front and the DA.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that obviously the DA that we see today is the Democratic Party and the New National Party that merged, what was this, 2004, around there. So inside there are lots of, you know, disgruntled voters that also don't like the DA the way it is now.
Yeah.
So
what, that's... As a black-led party?
I don't think as a black-led party. I'd say more English-dominated party.
Yeah.
And I think that's... I mean, there are little spots of Afrikaner nationalism still around in parts. So people probably just don't like voting for an English-speaking leader.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre to think of it that way. And I mean, I'm not talking about my own opinion.
Yeah,
I'm just saying
sure.
that's the kind of talk you sometimes hear on the Jolly Roger. It's just there.
Yeah.
Peter, I mean, what I find interesting about this... And
stop drinking at the Jolly Roger. Go to Fender, stop.
Yeah. Let's come to our bar.
Fenderstorp Crew.
In the Jolly, there's still a debate. I think at Fenderstorp...
But, I mean, what's interesting about these figures in the IRR is one of the polls talks about the amount of undecided voters.
Yeah.
You know, the IRR says it's very fluid because there's so many people who don't know who they're going to vote for. There's no obvious candidates for many people. So I think the Ipsos poll said 45% of people... did not know who they were going to vote for a week before the election, and that's pretty huge.
Obviously,
that's a big swing.
And Ipsos and I know the people who compile the IRR polls argue with each other about who's right and whose methodology is better. It's one of the things that we'll find out after, you know, by Friday. Mm. One is which polls were better than the other, and two, who is the party that turns out to be as strong as it said it was. For me, I can't wait for this election to be over. Obviously, I want a certain result. I'm very frightened of the EFF getting into any level of government because I really do think that it'll do damage to our standing in the world.
If the UK example where David Cameron and independent Democrats were like, oh, the kingmaker, suddenly they came in and for one term was a crazy marriage, then they were dead the next term. So perhaps an EFF going in coalition with the ANC, at some point, it would die. I don't think the EFF would survive in a marriage with the ANC. EFF would survive with EFF against DA, there's a white party, and there's EFF extreme. But within an ANC collective, maybe we should think of it as a way of squashing the EFF within the ANC. I don't know. I'm just trying to think contrarian here, but saying... Yeah, maybe
you're looking for the positives.
Yeah, like, wasn't it? It could. A big ANC party, and then you bring Julius. But EFF is just ANC's youth league under Zuma, the left, right? They're coming back in. Their policy, they might be more extreme, but they're more or less in the same line. So it could actually be a way of just shutting down the EFF. EFF would be very... I think EFF, they want to remain relevant, would not go in a coalition with the ANC, would go in a coalition with DA. If they go in with the ANC, they come back.
Why are you pointing at Rob?
No, but it's... Well, I want to point it here, anyway. But
I mean, they must be exhausted, these guys.
Yeah. Okay? Mm. No, they have to. So, I don't know. Like, an EFF marriage ANC is death of EFF, I think, more than anything else. But EFF with DA, it's always relevant. Julius versus Musi, or Julius versus Zilla.
Cyril wouldn't survive a remarriage, though, with EFF, would he?
Again... You know, Cyril, all on this table we've been doing for 3 years now has always surprised us, and I think
outcome for him.
Yeah,
he did chair the disciplinary committee that kicked Julius
That's
out.
True. So we'll move along slightly. Let's assume the election is over, that the ANC has scraped through with 52% of the vote. Nationally, it's involved in all sorts of coalition talks in the Western Cape and in Gauteng. It might even try and run minority governments where it's the biggest party, right? That's not impossible. Other parties can support it or not support it, depending on what they do. But the FM, both Rob and Sukhanati, you've got two editorials. One is about Ace Magashule and Ramaphosa. The other one is Tito Mboweni. And there's a big lunch with the FT. feature with him in the FT this Saturday. It's reprinted in Business Day, I see today. And you talk about him. It's a very jovial interview, and it's a really nice read with the Africa editor, David Pilling.
Was it 8 bottles of wine that they went through? Or
yeah, whatever, yeah, yeah. But you end up here saying, you're saying approvingly that he has the right attitude towards state-owned assets that lose money. And you say President Cyril Ramaphosa should move mountains to ensure Mboweni stays, i.e. in government. We have too few economically sensible people in the cabinet as it is. Now, that could only have been written either by you, Rob, or by you, Sikonati, or by both of you. Surely there are some alternatives here.
He ate for 8 hours, didn't drink 8 bottles of wine.
Okay. They started drinking at 12.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, Peter, in that interview, he talked about the fact that, for example, he's now forbidden from talking about SA Airways,
yeah,
despite how much money it loses. Yeah. But he was still, you know, the point about Tito is he's a very independent-minded person.
Yeah.
He's got the ability to say, this is my job, my fiduciary responsibility here is to look after the fiscus, not to look after the interests of the ANC, and there aren't enough people who think like that. And that's what it's premised on. I mean, during this interview, he talked about how he wouldn't give any of his own personal money to SAA at all. He said that if you have a chicken farm, to get eggs, and the chickens don't lay any eggs, then you close the farm. And that was his analogy for SAA. And that seems to be a very rare commodity, that kind of independent thinking within government. And that was the argument.
But you had a slight issue with it.
Yes. He tells the Financial Times that he won't, if it was his personal business, he wouldn't put a cent into South African Airways. Yet he is happy to put taxpayers' money in it. He's happy to put pensioners' funds in it. And he's the finance minister. Of course, the ANC controls him. But what does that mean for the post-May election?
Yeah.
Is he coming back or is he not? He clearly is not being allowed to do his job. And he said before, particularly on Budget Day, that he would close SAA down again, Petrol SA and the SABC, if they want money from him. So he's not able to do his job. Why is he there?
Ron, is he the best possible finance minister after the election?
Initially I was like, he should go, but he always seemed disinterested in the job. However, I'm with Rob on this one. That kind of indifference to his ANC future within the party, and that independent, basically he's behaving like a Reserve Bank governor. Yeah. You almost see in his mindset, I am still that, you know, even that in that
column. You could see in the article.
Yeah, he wants to be called governor still, so he's behaving very much like Lesetia, very much saying, look.
He's above the fray.
Above the fray. I really don't care if you keep me the NEC or if you make me president of this country at some point, right? So I like that about him. I like the indifference. I've warmed up to Tito just on those aspects of what Rob is saying. And you know, when he says, look, SAA, I'm going to sell you, right? You shouldn't be. So I think it gets the executive on SAA, like, clear understanding that, look, there isn't this cash cow that is Treasury, come and get bailouts. So I think he's making a clear message that and Treasury, to get any money from us, any bailouts from us, is not going to be easy.
They're not exactly enormously rich pickings out there to run the Treasury. I mean, he's got to find a minister and a deputy minister, because presumably Monde Gongobele is not going to want to hang around. I mean, he's had enough. He's had a rough ride for the last year or so with the PRC.
We have two former finance ministers in parliament still.
Okay.
Des van Rooyen and Malusi Gigaba are still available.
Lovely.
Yeah,
no, Des is not. I'm afraid Des sadly is unavailable this time.
The weekend special is not available.
He could be brought in. But I did notice that in the parliamentary list, the famous parliamentary list of the ANCs, that Barbara Creasy, who's been the Gauteng finance MEC, is now going to parliament. So presumably that would be partly to make her available for one of those jobs, no?
I think she'd be excellent as deputy. And because you can say that Tito's behaving like a ceremonial chairman, right? Who's having long lunches and he doesn't really go to the office much. And that's how he's going to operate. That's not going to change. I don't think anyone's going to get him back in an office every day. I mean, Creasy might be just that.
The de facto
running
sort of
the ship,
department.
Yeah, and whilst they have. And he'll be great political cover for her as well. So everyone throwing pot shots, so we're shooting at Tito. Who doesn't really care? Literally, it'll take the heat. So maybe, I don't know. That's just.
Can I just ask you, because you guys have all been watching the PRC thing. Where are we with the PRC inquiry? Does it matter whether the deputy finance minister is the PRC chairman or not?
I mean, I do think it does matter, and I don't think it's a good thing at all, because it does open it up to interference. I mean, the PIC okay. should be looking after after pensioners' money. That's its fiduciary responsibility at the moment.
So part of the Commission of Inquiry's mandate will be to make a recommendation on that, will it
Absolutely,
not?
Absolutely, yeah.
And what do you think, having heard what you've heard, might that recommendation be?
Well, I think that the Commission, I mean, it's still going on. Election Party is still hearing it, and there's still more to come out. But I think at this time, it looks like political interference at the PIC has been a big problem, and that's an obvious way to remedy that, and very obvious and public way to say that, look, we don't have a politician who's leading us at the moment. So I think that the recommendation should be to not allow that.
That's what Pravin wanted before he left. Before he was fired the last time as finance minister on his that last press conference, he said that he wanted to make the recommendation that...
It's not law, it's a convention.
It's a convention,
you could get rid of quite easily. Yeah. Optically, it looks much better.
Yeah. Can I ask, did the PIC... I mean, we know the PIC is a big investor in almost every sort of investable share on the stock market.
And some that aren't investable.
And some that aren't investable.
And some that aren't on the stock market.
But TJ, did they ever invest in... Are they big investors in ShopRite?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're number two.
Really?
Yeah. I actually didn't check
recently. So you understand better than me, because I don't understand high finance. Why... just sketch the background to this debate about releasing or cancelling... deferred shares, we'll have to find out what deferred shares are first, worth 3 billion rand to Christo Wiese, who is the ShopRite chairman, out of which he will make something like, in cash, 3.5 billion rand.
Yeah, if you put it in rand terms, yeah.
Yeah.
But he'll be getting ShopRite shares for that. That's the thing. He'll be getting ordinary ShopRite shares.
Oh, he won't be getting... It's not a cash arrangement.
Yeah.
So he'll gets...
And does his stake was about 16, and after the deal, it would be something like 18. So it's ballpark somewhere there.
It's 14,
there.
And, sorry, 18.
14 and 18. But yeah,
it's moved from what to what?
It's 14 or 15 to 18%. So his stake in ShopRite was about
increase.
Yes. So yeah.
Peter, I mean, one of the things that these deferred shares essentially.
How does a share become deferred?
Well, it's a special structure. It's its own structure of shares that allow Christo Wiese, who holds it, he's the only deferred shareholder there. It gives him a whole lot extra voting power. So it suddenly gives him 32% blocking power. So together with his other shares, he controls 42% of the vote of the company.
Right.
So it's an immensely powerful position, though he's the only one who has it. So he can block any special resolution, he can block any takeover for ShopRite. Mm-hmm. So valuing those shares is very difficult. But Christo says, this is the price I'm putting on these shares, and if you want to buy me out, that's what it'll take. And the shareholders are saying, well, why do we need to do that? We don't need to do that to buy you out.
TJ, you've written this book about Christo Wiese, Risks and Riches, Hold It Up. Is there something in Christo Wiese, is there a sort of a reluctance? Has he been burnt by Steinhoff to the extent that he would like to quietly, you know, just...
Exit stage left,
yeah.
From everything that I've read and the interviews I've done, he likes to be in the public eye, and he likes those things. So I don't think he's...
Because you describe quite a modest guy in the book.
Yeah, right? I mean, quite an ordinary guy.
Yeah.
Modest is difficult to say, but yeah, an ordinary guy. But he... If you look at what he's done over the years... He tries to keep control with as little as possible, with putting as little money in as possible.
Yeah.
This is with his banking empire. He controlled the fifth largest banking group with a 7% economic stake at the time, of which he didn't even have it all.
This was the former Boland Bank.
Boland Bank that became BOE, NBS, BOE, and then
using these complicated share structures. Mm.
Exactly. So, and I mean, this is a more recent structure, but the deferred shares, that's how he's kept control of a ShopRite for
what
all these
be,
years.
The shareholders are reluctant to give him this money or these shares, or they're happy to go along with it?
Well, this is the thing that we don't know. We've seen some of the shareholders coming out strongly against it. Some don't care.
Yeah.
And obviously, he's one of the large shareholders. Yeah. And then the PIC try and get a response out of them at this stage. Yeah.
Is it possible for the PIC to have a point of view at the moment? I mean, are they?
I don't know.
Yeah.
And they've also been long-term allies. The PIC and Christo, they've usually, all through Steinhoff, many years with ShopRite, yeah. they've usually voted on the same side. So right. it's almost in the bag. Yeah.
Getting rid of that artificial control, this is one of the pyramid structures that South African companies all the way back yeah. in the 70s implemented to secure control. This is what Pick and Pay did, Liberty and all of them. Yes.
And they've all been dismantled.
They've all been dismantled. Yeah. The difference with this one, it was only implemented in 2000.
Yeah.
I guess that was about the time that Walmart was sniffing yeah. around and they had Christo had to secure control in ShopRite yeah. after trying to get Braid, another of yes. his investments, to take private ShopRite. Yeah. So when that failed, decided, okay, I'll give myself an extra, and of course investors backed it, allowed it. I'll give myself a voting control.
Yeah.
So he gets dividends of only about 14% of the total shares held in the group, but he votes. So it's good for the investors to let him go. 3 billion rand? I don't know. They have to decide what the value of that control
once,
is.
Once that has happened, then it would be impossible for him to run blocking votes against, say, anybody who wanted to take over the company or.
Definitely.
But this is interesting. So if he has 18% of the vote and the PIC has 17 or somewhere around there, if they're closely aligned, they can still block anything.
Sort of like the EFF and the ANC.
Yeah,
but yes. different.
But I think he'll love the comparison.
That's the thing about investment, our investment community. If stand-off never happened, this would be a breeze. This wouldn't even be an issue, yeah. actually.
Christo wouldn't need the money.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean,
that's
you wouldn't need the money.
Does he need the money, TJ?
Oh, yeah.
I don't.
Does he have big debts?
I don't. This is the funny thing. You can see the wine farms and you can see the listed share price. If you look at the way he structured, and we just spoke about the banking empire,
yeah.
back then it was a highly leveraged structure. Yeah. So yeah. you would assume that he's still highly leveraged. That, and then this, Rob, you probably... Yeah.
That's South Africa for you.
Yeah.
We all live on debt. It's all for show. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the election.